This morning we'll continue our study of the Sermon on the Mount. We started several weeks ago, and because of the holidays and different things, we took a short break. But you'll remember that we studied Jesus as the master teacher and how people respected him as they came to him to hear his words, and how he told us that we are to reflect the light of Christ, that we are to be lights in the world, and that we're to be as salt in the sense that we are to have an effect, a positive effect upon the world that is around us. And we looked at what Jesus said about the teaching of the scribes and the Pharisees, later who he would call great hypocrites in Matthew chapter 23, because they were combining the traditions of men with the commandments of God, and they were changing the idea of what God had actually commanded them. In our reading this morning, you'll notice there in verse 21, "You have heard it said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire." Let's look then at what the Pharisees knew, what they could have known, should have known, and what they were doing with what they had. The first thing we want to notice this morning is that Jesus teaches us and taught these people that we must assess our attitudes, not just our actions. It goes beyond what we actually do. See, the Pharisees were teaching that it was okay to hold a grudge. It was okay to hate someone as long as you didn't go through with the act of committing murder, as long as you didn't kill them. But the matter of murder was dealt with in the Old Testament. Among the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20 and verse 13, the King James there says, "Thou shalt not kill." The New King James there says, "Thou shalt do no murder." It implies a premeditation, because the law of Moses dealt with the fact that sometimes a death might be caused by accident. A person operating as a soldier, as an agent of the state, enforcing the laws, and in the Old Testament period, enforcing direct commands of God, were sometimes in a military setting required to take the life of someone else. But the intent here is this premeditation: thou shalt do no murder, thou shalt not kill. The reference to the danger of judgment, though, that Jesus mentions is not found in the Old Testament, but it should have been understood by anyone who had read the law of Moses. But Jesus combines two quotations, Exodus 20 and verse 13, Deuteronomy 5 and verse 17. He does this to emphasize the fact that legislation against murder eventually came to be understood as just a prohibition of the outward act. So you can hate someone all you want as long as you don't commit murder, according to the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were justifying their right in their own mind to hold resentment in their heart toward one another or toward other people. And Jesus is correcting that. Well, God's law through Moses was not intended to forbid murder while permitting someone to have a murderous and hateful attitude in their heart. If you look back in the Old Testament at Leviticus 19 and verse 17, the law of Moses said, "Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him." If we turn a little bit further and look at Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 17, we'll find this: "Rejoice not when thine enemy falleth, and let not thine heart be glad when he stumbleth, lest the Lord see it, and it displease him, and he turn away his wrath from him." So here are two passages, and you'll see on the screen there are many others, but here are two passages that tell us that even during the Old Testament time, and the scribes and the Pharisees had access to these words, they knew, number one, that they were not to commit the act of murder, to plan to kill someone and to take that person's life. And the person who did that, by man, his blood was to be shed. But the Bible also told them and tells us that they were not to hate their brother either. And so the idea that one could hate, harbor grudges, bear a grudge, As long as one did not kill, that was a tradition. That was a distortion of the will of God by the Pharisees. Jesus, being God as well as man and being the original giver of the law, had a right to expound upon it or change it in any way that he pleases. And he didn't change anything. He just adds to this and expands upon it. He said, if any man is angry with his brother without a cause. Now, anger is a natural feeling. God gave us the ability to be able to be angry. It is a feeling that we can have towards something that is done to us. It is a feeling that we can have towards something that is evil, something that we should distance ourselves from in the first place. And the Bible makes that distinction. When we become angry against sin, the Bible tells us that it is lawful. In Psalm 7 and verse 11, the Bible tells us that God is angry with the wicked. In Mark 3 and verse 5, we find the most unusual situation because it says that the Lord looked upon those people there with anger. The Lord looked upon them with anger. Why? Because he wanted to kill them? No. And not because he was holding a grudge, but because they were distorting their view and the view of other people. They were distorting that view of him. And Jesus was angry with them for their hypocrisy. In Ephesians 4 and verse 26, remember that Paul said, be angry and sin not. He didn't say, do not be angry. He said, be angry and sin not. Well, what type of anger is that? It is anger against sin, anger that is against evil, not a hatred that we might have for someone else. What Jesus is condemning here is anger without a cause, anger that comes unjustly, that comes rashly, comes hastily, when no offense has been given or intended. In that case, it is evil. It's a violation of the sixth commandment. John said in 1 John 3 and verse 15, he that hateth his brother is a murderer. He that hateth his brother is a murderer. Expanding upon what Jesus said in our text. He has a feeling toward his brother that would lead him to commit murder if it were fully acted out. How could we ever feel that way toward a brother? A murderous heart is evidenced by words of anger or contempt. And Jesus explains the word reka. The word reka there means empty head. It's similar to our word idiot. It's like saying the person is an idiot in the sense that person has no sense whatsoever. Jesus said that reka is a word that we should not say. He says if we say that, we're in danger of the council. The council in the day of Jesus was the Sanhedrin Council. It was a council that was instituted some 200 years before Christ by the Maccabees. It was made up of 72 members of the chief priests and the elders of the people, and the high priest was the president of the council. Until the time that the Romans took control of the region, that council had the power of life and death. But once the Romans took control, they could recommend death to the Romans, but it was up to the Roman leaders to execute that sentence. This was the tribunal before whom Jesus was going to appear and before whom he did appear. This is Matthew 26, verses 3 through 57, John 18 and verse 24. So, reka. Jesus said a person that would call someone that, which again is common, is contemporary with our word idiot, that person would have been in Jesus' day subject to the council. But he also says that he speaks of the person who is angry with his brother without a cause. Then he mentions another word, the word fool. The word fool that is used here does not mean a person who does foolish things. It is a word that has a greater insult and a greater import. It means a graceless wretch. It's the way it's defined. It means a person who does not deserve, is undeserving of the grace of God. And none of us are really qualified to be able to say that, because every human being is worthy of the grace of God and is a subject of, a recipient of the grace of God in some way. this word, graceless wretch, he said that the one who says fool, this word, is in danger of hell fire. And this is, in the Greek, the Gehenna fire that is translated as hell. This valley is one that was east of Jerusalem. It was the valley of Hinnom. And in that valley, there was the sacrifice to the false god Molech. There was an idol that was built to this false god there. And it had arms that were outreached, like it could reach out and hold anyone, but it was intended to hold babies and young children. And when they offered sacrifices, child sacrifice to that god, they would heat that altar with a fire from the inside until it got so hot, they would take that child and lay that child upon the arms of that false god. And so that the people could not hear the cries of the child, they would all shout and beat on drums as loudly as they could during that sacrifice so that they could not hear. When we think about a person like that, a person who would say to someone else or who would call someone else a graceless wretch, a fool in that sense, that they're not deserving of God's grace, Jesus said that we would be in danger of hellfire, eternal hellfire. Those drums that they would beat upon when they offered child sacrifice in the valley of Hinnom were called toph. And that's interesting. You may even recognize that word, because from that we get the word tophet that we find in Jeremiah 7:31-32. So we see then that we need to be careful with our words. We need to be careful what we say. We need to be careful what we call people. Some of the things that may have become just commonplace, maybe we need to reconsider them. We do need to be careful. You know, the Bible says that God looks upon the heart. 1 Samuel 16:7, man looks upon the outside, but God looks upon the heart. When a person says something like this, normally it's not just the words that we hear, but it's the expression upon the face that lets us know whether that person is acting out of hate and is speaking out of hate and speaking out of anger. We look on the outside, but the Lord looks upon the heart. And Jesus here teaches that what's on the inside is just as important as what is developed on the outside. The person who wants to pull the trigger is a practical murderer. It's as if he had already done it in regard to his heart. Well, what about the attributes of the hateful heart then? The hateful heart is blind and unproductive. John said in 1 John 2:10, he that loveth his brother abideth in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him. But he that hateth his brother is in darkness, and walketh in darkness, and knoweth not whither he goeth, because that darkness has blinded his eyes. The danger here is that we could become so angry and so bitter that it could become a habit. And the habit could go on for so long that we don't even realize that we're walking around with hate. So it is blind, John says, it's unproductive. And more than that, it's self-destructive. He said in 1 John 3:15, whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. And you know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. What is John saying? John is saying, if I hate my brother, I'm going to hell. In plain language, that's what he said. The hateful heart is not only blind and unproductive and self-destructive, but it's also deceptive. 1 John 4:20, if a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? An odd example of how far some would go to show their hatred is a book called The Insult Dictionary. It's published in England. I'm glad it wasn't here. It's a five-language guide designed expressly for tourists who must cope with lost baggage, mixed-up reservation, cold breakfast, terrible service, and padded bills. So you can assault people in five different languages. Is that where we've come as humanity? Do we have a book? You probably haven't. You can probably get an app now to know how to insult someone else. The Bible says that seeking to destroy someone else in reality is actually to destroy one's own self. What's some reasons that we might have a hateful heart? Well, for one thing, we might hate someone, or we might be tempted to hate someone because they have wronged us, because they've done something to hurt us, and we tend to want to get back. We want vengeance. We want revenge. We seek to avenge ourselves. That's not what a Christian does. Another reason that we might have a heart filled with hate is because we're too proud to apologize. Because we have said or done something to hurt someone else, but we're too proud to apologize, and so instead of humbling ourselves, we seek to destroy the other person. Both of these is wrong. Both will make us miserable. And both of them will condemn our souls. Someone has said, and I mention this often because it's really it's a good illustration. Hating somebody else and holding a grudge is like drinking poison and hoping that they will die. They don't care what you're thinking about them, in most cases. Not hurting anybody else, but yourself. Putting our own soul in danger. There are some things that we need to just let go in the beginning. We have to ask ourselves the question, is it really worth it? Am I walking around with a chip on my shoulder just trying to be offended so that I can hate someone, so that I can be mad at someone? Solomon said in Proverbs 19 and verse 11, "The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression." Again, in Proverbs 17 and verse 4, and I'm reading from a different translation. It's a modern English version, but it says it this way. Starting a quarrel is like breaching a dam. So drop the matter before a dispute breaks out. Pick your battles. Determine, is this really even worth a comment? Is it even worth consideration? Peter said in 1 Peter 4 and verse 8, "Above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, an intense love for one another," he said, "for charity shall cover the multitude of sins." If we love each other the way that we should, we're seeking forgiveness, not an excuse to be mad and to pout and to hate. Paul said in Colossians 3 and verse 13, "Forbearing one another and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ also forgave you." We need to be forgiving. Second thing that we find in what Jesus taught here is that we need to address wrongs that we have committed before we come to worship. Jesus says here, verse 23, "Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, thou rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar and go thy way. First, be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift." Later on, we're going to be told that we are to do the best that we can to do that, that some people will not be reconciled, but that we need to do our part. Jesus is talking about what we need to do. God will not accept our gifts of praise and adoration when another has been legitimately harmed and deserve to be recompensed. The Pharisees seemed to only be concerned about the external acts of worship. They weren't worried about what someone else thought or worshiping from the heart. But even if a man conformed to the external rites of the law of Moses, if a person today conformed to the New Testament acts of worship, he simply goes to church, sings songs, listens to a long-winded preacher, partakes of the Lord's Supper, but is angry with his brother or his sister. This is in a generic sense here. Has hatred towards someone else. Jesus said, our worship is in vain. He said, go and make it right first before you come to worship. Jesus said, it's of more confidence to have the heart right when you perform the outward act than to not do so. He did not tell us to wait until the offended brother comes to us but to go to that person and to seek him out and to do what we can to make sure that we are reconciled. So now the worship of God. When we do that, it will be acceptable. Whatever we do externally, we need to make sure that our heart is right, not only with God, but also with each other. God requires that for our worship to be acceptable. He says, first be reconciled. If you have wronged him, make restitution. Maybe we mistreated someone in business. Maybe we said something we shouldn't have said about them to others and hurt their reputation. That will come up in just a moment. But if you've wronged him in whatever way it may be, or her, we need to first make restitution. If we owe a debt that needs to be paid, we need to pay it. If you have injured a person's character, we need to just admit it. If we have said something that isn't true, said something to hurt a person's character, we need to admit it. We need to confess it. We need to make it right. We need to do all in our power and all that we are told to do to make the matter right. Paul said in Romans 12 and verse 18, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. What Paul is reminding us is that there are some people that will not let us live peaceably with them. Someone asked one time, what about a neighbor that just will not leave me alone, that is always trying to start trouble? How can I be a Christian if I can't smooth that over? There are some people who will not be a good neighbor. There are some people who will not treat their brothers and their sisters the way that they ought to be treated, even when they know better, or if they know better. Paul said, if it be possible, as much as lieth within you. Doesn't that go back to what Jesus said? Make sure your heart is right. Do what you can do. Do your best to be that brother or sister. Do your best to be that good neighbor. Do your best to do good for others, regardless of what they do for you. Time won't allow us to go and to read all of this, but in Matthew chapter 18, there is a process that is given us for dealing with someone with whom we're having problems. We go to that person first, we go with two or three witnesses, and eventually we take it before the church if that person will not reconcile the issue. But the point is, we go. So we need to address wrongs before worship and do all that is in our power to settle the matter, even though some will not allow reconciliation. I'll leave those on the board for just a moment. But we're going to move on quickly to point number three, last, finally, and quickly. We need to attempt to avoid litigation. What does that mean? That we need to do all that we can do as Christians to not be in court with a fellow Christian. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 6. I heard an elder in the church with another congregation say one day, and this goes along with what the Apostle Paul has said. The Apostle Paul basically said, you've got wise men in the church. Why don't you go to them to help you work out your problems? And this elder asked, he said, why would I go to a heathen court? Why would I go to a heathen court to try to work out the problems I have with a brother? We've got the Bible. We've got the process. We need to be able to work it out together. And such is certainly true. So we would attempt to avoid litigation. So Jesus approaches this really from the spiritual side and the practical side. Look at what he says. He says, verse 25 of Matthew 5, agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou hast paid the othermost farthing. So it doesn't matter how small the payment is or the fine is, you will pay that. You will pay for what you've done. So he says, agree with your adversary quickly. Offenses prevent acceptable worship. They also could lead to jail time. And so Jesus makes a practical application here. We need to resolve our debts, even on the way to the courthouse, we might say. Why would we want to do that? Because procrastination, waiting to solve these problems, it proves contempt. If a person is so hard-headed that they will not admit or seek to right and wrong, they may just get hauled off to jail. Why would that happen? It goes back to what Jesus said in the beginning, because of hatred and because of pride. Booker T. Washington once said, "I am determined to permit no man to narrow or degrade my soul by making me hate him." Wow. Think about that statement. Think about who he was and what he endured, and then think again about what he said. "I am determined to permit no man to narrow or degrade my soul by making me hate him." But what if we don't take that attitude? What if we don't listen to Jesus? What if we smile and we pretend to love and we pretend to do all of the right things, and yet in our heart we have hatred? As Moses told the children of Israel in Numbers 32 and verse 23, "Be sure your sin will find you out," because the Lord knows our hearts. It is wrong to carry the contention to court, to go to court among brethren. Does that mean that the laws are not there for our benefit? Are there times when the legal system can be used to settle an issue or to come to a conclusion that can only be ascertained that way? It's not saying that we cannot do that, but listen to what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 1. "Dare any of you, having a matter against another," he's talking about Christians here, "dare you go to the law before the unjust and not before the saints? Do you not know that the saints shall judge the world? And if the world shall be judged by you, are you unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Know you not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life? If you then have judgments of things pertaining to this life, set them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. I speak to your shame. Is it so that there is not a wise man among you? No, not one that shall be able to judge between his brethren. Brother goeth to law with brother, and that before the unbelievers. Now, therefore, there is utterly a fault among you, because you go to law one with another. Why do you not rather take the wrong? Why do you not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? Nay, you do wrong and defraud, and that your brethren." That's a harsh statement. Why do you rather not take the wrong? Why would you sue a brother or sister, take them to court? Why would you not endure the wrong? The selfishness or the hatred that causes a brother to take a brother to court will be punished by God, Jesus tells us. Every action begins in the heart. Matthew 5 and verse 18. "But those things which proceed out of the mouth, they come forth from the heart, and they defile the man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man." Where did they come from? They came from the heart. What does Jesus tell us? Jesus tells us that we all need to look in the mirror. That's the person in the pulpit, the person in the pew. We all need to look in the mirror. We all need to examine our heart. We all need to make sure we're doing externally the right things in the right ways. We need to make sure we're doing it for the right reason, and that we love others as Christ loved us. Is your heart right with God this morning? Have you been obedient to the gospel, believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and being buried with Christ in baptism? Mark 16 and verse 16. For the remission of sins, Acts 2 and verse 38. Having sins washed away in baptism, Acts 22 and verse 16. And confessing our faith before men, Romans 10, 9 and 10. Have we been faithful? None of us are perfect. We all, from time to time, get our feelings hurt. What do we do with it? Do we get over it? Do we go to someone that can help us work it out? Someone in the church who is very wise? You need to think about going to the elders when there's a problem in the church. They can look at a situation from the standpoint of brotherhood and of love and of concern, and they care about you. Why would we think of going to court? Why would we even think of trying to hate one another? No matter what has happened, if Jesus can hang on the cross and say, "Father, forgive them, they know not what they do," can't we forgive? Can't we love? Can't we above all make sure that we do not hate? If you're a New Testament Christian and you haven't been living the way that you should, and there's something amiss in your life that would need the prayers of the church, confessing our faults one to another, James 5 and verse 16, we don't do that because we hate each other. We do that because we love each other. You've heard people say, "We will pray with you and for you." That's right, we pray with you because we're not perfect either. Just seeking to go to heaven. Jesus taught some powerful lessons, didn't he? That's why he's called the Master Teacher. Do those lessons apply to you and me this morning? If they do, if we could help you in any way, would you come as we stand and as we sing?